This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Wells Tech, everybody. We are live with episode 428 for Wednesday, January 20th, 2016. And those of you that are watching at home, notice that we are in a different place and we have some folks with us. We have Sally joining as usual. This time I came to Sally and we are broadcasting from, what do we call this?
Wells Technology West.
Wells Technology West.
That's what we call it.
But we're in those that are watching can see in the background, we're broadcasting from MLC in a computer lab. This is the computer lab. So, and gracious enough to join us, Professor James Karlofsky, who we've had on the show before, both of you we've had on the show before. So this is newbie excuses you're going to provide, you know, as we go through the show. And then Dr. Jim Grinwald. So before we get too much further, I'll let you guys introduce yourselves, what you do here, all right? How about that? James, you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. My name is Professor James Karlofsky. This is my second year teaching here at Martin Luther College. My official title is a professor of mathematics and instructional technology. So kind of the neat responsibility I have here at Martin Luther College is that I get to teach teachers how to use technology, how to understand that they're not experts and they maybe never will be. I also get to continue my education. I'm working on my PhD in math education, which will include some math and instructional technology from the University of Minnesota. I come from Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School before that and was a grade school principal at St. John's in Sparta, Wisconsin before that. I'm blessed with five children, my wife, Kate, who also was a teacher for a year with me when I was the principal there, but serve here currently in New Ulm in my second year.
Great. Thanks for joining us. Jim?
Dr. Jim Grunwald. Can't remember how many years I've been here since 98. My official title is Director of Academic Computing at the college, which means that I also then work with the faculty in training them to make use of technology in the classroom. I also am heavily involved with online distance learning at Martin Luther College, which involves teaching others to design, construct, and teach their courses online. And I would say that probably takes up the majority of my administrative time. Beyond that, beyond MLC, I also serve as the superintendent for the Association of Lutheran High Schools Online, where we are developing and offering online courses between the Wells High Schools.
Mm-hmm. So do you work together on things as well, or you just kind of do your own
thing? Work together quite a bit on faculty training, and Sally has been gracious enough to assist us for the past 2 years on that as well. So, yeah, we do communicate quite a bit.
Okay. So we do brainstorm not only how we want to train our faculty, but also as we've developed a teaching with technology course here, how best to serve our students and ultimately our college of ministry at large.
Okay, and your position didn't exist before you filled the role?
That's correct. So I kind of fill a few shoes that didn't previously exist. Okay. So the college saw that there was a need for increased capacity with, you know, integrating technology into training faculty and student-wide. So kind of doing a few more things, but also taking a few things off of Dr. Grunwald's plate as well.
Okay, good. So he was a welcome sight.
He was. He was very much so.
Not only a good-looking man, but he's doing good things for you.
Okay. Definitely. And that kind of leads into the direction we wanted to go with the conversation. That you mentioned teaching with technology. Obviously, we're training a lot of teachers here at MLC, and we want them to be equipped to go out and be leaders in this new digital age in the classroom and things. So I think that's led to some changes recently with some of the curriculum that you have. So maybe you could tell us, you know, what does a teacher get versus what a pastor gets in terms of technology here?
Sure, I'll take the course and I'll let Jim talk about the different programs and things like that. But as you said, we developed a Teaching with Technology course and really took the emphasis away from a previous course where it was mainly the Microsoft Office suite and more towards what we felt are the pulse of our Wells schools, you know, an emphasis on the world of Google, Google Apps for Education, a lot of emphasis on iPads as well, but then also to help them realize that there are just a plethora of other tools that out there that are out there for them to use. And we can lead them to various places, but we can't guarantee even what graduation looks like as far as how technology and graduation fits in 2 or 3 years. Because if you just think back 2 or 3 years ago, how far things have changed, which led to you need to start building a network and other things we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah. Since we're in the lab here, I just walked around and looked at some of the things on the walls. One of them is the ISTE standards for technology. And one of those by the end of high school is the ability to assess technology. And I'm sure you can't predict what technologies, like you said, are going to be out there when they're in the ministry. But really what they have to do is be able to be comfortable enough and be able to assess what's going to work in their ministries or not, right?
Right, so the Teaching with Technology course is a required course for the teacher track and staff ministry students. It's generally taught in the sophomore or junior year in their program plans. Mm-hmm. And we used to teach the old technology course to incoming freshmen, and then it seems so removed from when they would actually be doing their clinical experiences mm-hmm. or student teaching. So we're trying to move something closer to when they would have those particular experiences as well. As far as Pastor Track, it's an elective course for them, so they're welcome to take it, but it is really geared towards the teachers in the classroom and the types of technology that is currently in the classroom. And as James said, trying to do somewhat predicting as best we can of what might be up and coming in the future.
So my guess is that there would be a wide spectrum of students you're seeing through these classes, some that, you know, kind of well along the way to where they need to be and some in the beginning stages. Or what was your expectation when you started the course? You know, yeah, these kids are young. They've grown up with technology, not unlike us. So it's not something new to them. How has that played out?
Yeah, I feel like students have grown up using technology, but mainly for their own personal use. You know, they may not use Facebook or Twitter or those types of networks, but they don't really know how to teach with it.
Okay.
And I don't think we've really seen the generation yet that has grown up in that one-to-one environment where where that device at their lap or at their station is something that's just assumed to be there. Mainly the students that we have had have had carts, and the wireless was spotty, and they don't have all positive reactions
right.
to it.
Good point.
And we're just starting to see the tipping point where the majority of students expect that because they've experienced that in the past. When we talk about teaching with technology, it's still somewhat a foreign concept to some extent to students. They understand things like how a presentation works, but they don't really understand ideas about managing a classroom, making wise decisions, communicating with parents, using the best of the tools that are there, leveraging grants or resources that are out there, and all the things that go into naturally teaching with technology.
They're probably surprised when they look at the curriculum mm-hmm. and all these moving parts that, they were kind of on the receiving end before. Now they've got to mm-hmm. be on the other end of things.
Right, and the students are coming into this course with, as you mentioned, all kinds of different experiences before. Some have worked with Chromebooks before, and some have never seen them before. So the way we have the course structured, we had 3 sections last semester, so we would actually rotate the equipment. So when we're doing Chromebooks, all of the students have Chromebooks that we supply awesome. For them, and they take those with them and sort of live with them for the 4 to 6 weeks that we're studying that. So while that section is doing Chromebooks, another section might be doing iPads. So we have a set of iPads that we can send out. Mm-hmm. And we also then make use of the desktop machines we have in here, or they can bring in their own laptop computers too. where we're looking at Web 2.0 apps and other types of programs that might be useful in the classroom.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, are computer labs like this becoming less and less central to the process?
I think so. I mean, it's like, how long do we even have a computer lab? And many of our schools
are asking the same question.
Either going to bring your own device or supplying Chromebooks or iPads or something else.
And I think one of the major things that's moved that is improved wireless. You know, I really see that 5 years from now, our students will be telling stories about when wireless used to be spotty. And because
we... thin little wire. Yeah. You know,
and because we can live on devices that don't have to be tied anywhere, right. it's really changed the ballgame of education for pastors, teachers, or staff ministers. And students do have devices that can do so much that the old days of they need a desktop computer to run high-powered anything, it doesn't really apply in this world where many things are web-based.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about the teachers here on campus outside of teaching with technology, and I'm wondering if these students are seeing their professors modeling some of these techniques. You know, how has the faculty adopted teaching with technology here on campus?
I would say our faculty does quite well. I mean, if I compared our faculty to, for example, University of Minnesota, we would compare very admirably. I mean, our faculty knows how to use devices. They've had laptops for several years now. I would say where our faculty is going or trying to push the envelope is now that MLC is a Google Apps for Education school, that our faculty really thinks about, you know, how do you communicate with students? How do you leverage the best of the collaborative stuff of Google? We have faculty members that have, for example, used a device like Swivel to say, you know, if practice teachers are modeling micro lessons in the classroom, let's get a high quality image of what they're doing. Let's let things like YouTube make it so that we can share it very well. We have faculty members that are thinking about the way that they provide feedback. Mm-hmm. And not just in one modality, like, you know, we mentioned Google or even something like Moodle, but just that there are many other tools that are out there and to not just be content that one size has to fit all.
Okay. This past August, we had a fall faculty conference, which is an annual event on campus here, sort of an in-service for our faculty. And this year one day was focused strictly on technology. And I was somewhat surprised at how much our faculty were making use of technology. What we did is we had asked around and found out which faculty were using various devices, and then we had them present to the rest of the faculty sort of like a 3 to 5 minute mini presentation of what they were doing and using technology to do. And then there were sectionals where interested faculty could go to these different areas to see what their fellow faculty members were doing. And the feedback from that, from our own faculty, was very positive that mm-hmm. we actually did that.
Not just you two demonstrating all this.
No, in fact, we wanted to
share the
sort
wealth,
of, huh? Right, get other traditional faculty presenting.
And we found that, you know, your audience is a lot more receptive when you have commonalities. So a Greek or a Hebrew professor, for example, likes to see what other innovative Greek mm-hmm. or Hebrew professors are doing. You know, whether it was screencasting or live polling of your audiences, you can kind of see how there's a few that tried it and now you've seen that they've experienced successes, you know them personally, and now you're willing to try it in your own classroom. And it's interesting seeing the next wave of feedback about ways that I didn't realize I could do all these things very easily within my classroom. And you have that two layer of technology integration where you have professors modeling it for your students, but that second level of where they're thinking about, this is something that I really need to think about using in my own personal ministry to come.
Sure. Absolutely. So let's extend this down to some of our schools, our high schools, our grades, elementary schools, where there's usually, your positions really don't exist there, you know, to the level, you know, that you're asked to fulfill them. Usually it's, you know, the fifth grade teacher who is kind of likes technology, so he's given you do the technology stuff, which includes kind of the stuff that you're talking about, faculty training and bringing them along. Any advice for those folks who are, I'm sure, you know, overworked and, you know, may not even know where to begin? You know, are there resources that they could, that we could point them to, or maybe some tips that you could provide that would help them along the way? Because it's no less important that, you know, their faculty model this stuff and be able to adopt the technology that the schools are getting. They're getting Chromebooks, they're getting, you know, all this stuff. And a lot of it is kind of underutilized if the faculty doesn't figure out, you know, this is where it fits in my ministry.
So. I guess I'll start with that. You know, I think a good hint is to start small.
Okay.
To not bite off more than you can chew, to try for something that's very manageable, or even to step back. I really think it's important to let your pedagogy or your objectives push your classroom instead of technology. You don't have to shoehorn things into the technology that you would like to use, but to really rethink what you can accomplish with your classroom. There's something called the SAMR model. S-A-M-R stands for substitution, augmentation, modification, or redefinition. And just really thinking about what are ways that you can't just substitute with technology, but really redefine what your students can do. So for example, you know, why would a pastor stream his sermon? What audience would he reach with a video blog? What could a classroom teacher do with a polished presentation of students? What is your global audience that you might be able to reach with that?
Right.
You asked, you know, what are some resources that are out there? There are quite a number of professional networks. You know, this Wells Tech blog/website has a lot of resources, and we lead our MLC students to this site, to the Wells Google Plus group that exists for Google Schools, to just hear what real teachers are really asking in real classrooms. But I think there are quite a number of professional learning networks out there. If you're looking at Twitter, if you're looking at Pinterest, if you're looking at Facebook, the most common social network areas, that it's really important to find your niche and kind of stick to it, that you don't have to go one direction and then the next week go another direction, but start small, find something that you like, and just keep pushing in that direction.
Right, yeah, I think it's important whenever you're talking to fellow faculty about making use of technology in some way that they can find a relative advantage in doing so. So why do it with technology if it's working fine the way it is?
Right,
you
right.
have to be able to point out that there's some benefit. Might not be immediate, but at least in the long run, that there would be a benefit to making use of technology in that way.
Yeah, I would suppose a little bit of a difference between what you do and what they might have to do is you're teaching, you have a captive audience, so to speak, and you know they're getting desperate for all the tools they can get because they're going to have to do this for real at some point. You know, the poor fifth grade teacher out, you know, in the field is talking to other co-faculty members who have many more things that they, you know, need to focus on as well. So that's
and,
be
and
a
just
challenge.
That the world is not as big a place when it's interconnected with technology.
Right.
It is not as difficult for a one-room school in the Wells to find something to connect to, whether it's another Wells school, whether it's the public school, whether it's video over Skype
right.
in the classroom or something like that, where it's much easier to find resources. The challenge is the internet is a huge place, and how to manage your time to effectively move your classroom, your congregation, or wherever forward.
Great. I think there are some MLC programs, perhaps, that our listeners might be interested in. So besides the internet and the learning networks that are there, there are ways that they can further their education through MLC.
Right. The Office of Continuing Education and Graduate Studies, we have a number of technology-related courses available, anywhere from 1 to 3 credits. You can package then some of those courses to get a certificate or an advanced degree. We do have an educational technology certificate program, which consists of 15 credits. There's 1 3-credit required course in that program, enhancing the curriculum with technology. And then the remaining, there's a menu of courses for the remaining 12 credits that they could select from. We have a teaching online certificate for those that want to be qualified to teach online. That's a 9-credit. Again, there's required course. Teaching online is one course. A second course is designing and constructing online courses. And then the remaining three credits are just electives from a menu again. And then we do have the master's degree in education. It has four emphasis areas off of it, one of those being educational technology. And we have, I think, seven courses in the graduate program specific to educational technology. And some of those, again, are required courses and some would be electives. But that's a program that has been growing. We probably started the educational technology emphasis, I think, about 3 years ago. And we have about 20 students involved in that specific area right now. So it's becoming more common.
Awesome.
How do you guys stay up to date and maybe keep your pulse on what's going out there in our schools as well? Do you make site visits? Do you have your own networks that you kind of lean on? Do you meet with other educators that are doing the same thing you're doing?
Yeah, I try to make sure that I don't lose the connection that I've had from the past.
Right.
So, for example, I was an area Lutheran High School teacher and connected to the different tech directors, and I don't want to lose that. Last week you interviewed one of them, Josh Shainick, yeah, from Kettle, and he's routinely one of my email people. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to also to know the pulse nationally, places like Smart Brief and other places like mm-hmm. that tell you this is what's happening in education technology and places like that. As far as site visits go, we don't really have a program specifically for that, but for me personally, finding different ways to be in classrooms, to just steal ideas, right, to learn from what's there. And it's amazing how through technology, people find you and you can find them in various ways. But to kind of make it my mission that I'm not going to lose touch,
right,
with what a real pastor, a real teacher, real staff minister does in the trenches. But it is a challenge mm-hmm. because MLC is a different audience. My students all want to be there. They have to take my classes, but it's a little bit different in that mm-hmm. other world.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find also in the graduate courses that I teach online, for instance, we just had an assignment this last week where they had to list their top five issues regarding technology at their school. So I get a good idea, at least from the students that are enrolled in the course, what are the issues mm-hmm. that are facing our schools. So, and then also just reading, you know, things that come across the internet, as James had mentioned.
Watching Wells Tech.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks for the plug earlier. For your first time on your list, I'll right. give the buck I owe you a little bit later. What's next for MLC technology education? What do you have on your radar?
Well, I think improved collaboration with all of our schools of the Wells. I'd say that's a lofty goal. You could say starting with area Lutheran high schools, our prep schools, also the connection with Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary for our pastors about, are we all on the same page? Are we all modeling and going towards the same goal? I think that's one layer, that layer of communication. You mentioned how do we keep the pulse? That's part of it as well, mm-hmm. whether it's surveys, site visits, or other things like that. I know our faculty here is going to be pushed with a new device next school year. It's most likely that our school is going to be moving to the Windows Surface Pro 4s. And just a very nice device if you're running Windows-based things that's sleek, efficient, right, and all of that. But it also opens up a lot of other questions about how are we going to teach? It no longer is the day that you have to be physically connected to get to a projector, right, or for your students to get to a projector. So also at the same time kind of forcing us to look into things like a Miracast dongle or Apple TV or other things where we can wirelessly teach and don't have to necessarily stand in the front of the classroom.
Yep.
We already are piloting it in various classrooms and areas of our school, mm-hmm. but I only see that growing. Right. Now, I don't think there's perfect tools out there where you can take any bring your own device and perfectly stream it so I can see that student than me in other places, but I know that our faculty is hankering for tools like that where you can change the look of a classroom so that it's not just, you know, the sage on the stage, but the guide on the side, so to speak, where a teacher doesn't have to lecture. A teacher can work hand in hand.
And also with our teaching with technology course, this is the first year we have it, but obviously it's not a static course. There's going to be, you know, major changes as technology changes every semester or every year. Yeah. So we try to keep it the same from one semester to the next as much as we can. But you're right, from year to year, it's really really has to change as far as the devices and the apps that we're having the students take a look at.
Good. Well, we appreciate both of you, you know, sharing those thoughts, and that's inspiring, I think, to know that we're going to be seeing our future pastors and teachers coming to us with, you know, that baseline, which was very kind of rough or inconsistent, you know, before, kind of dependent on who they were, what their affinities were, how much they dove in. So but you guys have agreed to stick around and finish out the show with us. So we have kind of an abbreviated version, so we won't keep you too long, but Sally, we've got some Wells Now news that we want to remind people of, right?
We do. It's related to our Interactive Faith series. That's online Bible studies that are available to those that are interested. I need to get one thing off my screen out of the way. And it actually started last week, and somehow we didn't remind people last week, Martin. So we're here to remind you today that already tonight, there will be an interactive Bible study. It's every Wednesday night from January 13th through February 3rd. And the title of this series is Who is Your God? So if you want to join in, you can join anytime. It's broadcast at 6 and 8 p.m. Central Time. So same lessons each time, just giving different groups the opportunity to join at different times. So I've heard of congregations kind of gathering in one spot, maybe projecting the Bible study on a screen, and then there's time during it where you can have like breakout sessions and discussion and things. So you just kind of do your face-to-face Bible study discussions, and then you join back in with the leader via the stream. So jump in and join the Who is Your God Interactive Faith Bible Study.
If you go to wells.net/interactivefaith, you'll get to the right page. And it's never too late to jump in. And this, James, is an example of what you were talking about, pastors taking advantage of technology for you know, for ministry here. So, and this could be done on the congregational level, but this is wide open to the synod as well. So not possible 5-6 years ago.
Really. That's true.
So, all right. Now do our picks of the week section, and we always let guests go first. Jim, you want to start?
My pick of the week is Screencast-O-Matic at screencastomatic.com. And I've always been a big Jing fan for doing screencasting, and I've used that program for many years. So you might ask, well, why the switch?
Why, Jim? Why?
I've been one over.
Sally loves text.
That's right, I do.
and I still love Jing. The problems I ran into with Jing is for online courses, it's saving in SWF format, and that's not always compatible across all platforms. Who had come with some students or instructors that weren't able to view things. But Screencast-O-Matic, it saves automatically to an MP4 format. It can upload directly to YouTube, and with our MLC Gmail accounts, we have unlimited space on YouTube, so being able to save it there and then just linking to it from within Moodle, where most of our courses are. Also, another advantage of Screencast-O-Matic with the free version is 15-minute recording time, whereas with Jing, you were limited to the five. Mm-hmm. And maybe five is good sometimes if you want to really get to the main point. So maybe that's a disadvantage. I don't know. But our instructors were looking for something that would last longer.
So. Awesome.
So is that something you're sharing with your students as well?
Yeah, well, right. We'll have it in the Teaching with Technology course. So this past week, we just had an in-service for faculty that were interested in taking a look at it.
So that's a good question. Does your faculty get involved with distance learning, or flipped classroom kinds of approaches as well?
Yeah, we have several teachers that we talked about how they want to communicate with their students in various ways. I don't have a percentage of it, but we know that the trend is already here. Screencasting has existed for years already. For something like Screencast-O-Matic, it was neat to see universal acceptance of how easy it was to use. Mm-hmm. You know, you have many tech tools out there where it sounds great, but when I got to it, I had so many headaches. But to have something that basically on one click can work almost unanimously was, I can't believe I don't have a problem with this tool. You know, to your specific.
There are a lot of those moments with technology. Yeah. I was all ready to struggle with this.
But across the various disciplines, whether it's interpersonal communications, in history, in math, in various divisions, we do have faculty members that are flipping portions of their classroom, even communicating with their students. So, for example, I like to take a student question about a topic and just screencast my response to them instead of trying to fit it into two paragraphs that don't make sense to the student. I can actually show them in various ways what's going on.
Awesome.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Good pick. James, how about yourself?
Well, I'm a big Google Chrome follower and user. It basically is the only browser that I use. And I have two Chrome extensions to think about. I know that these tools exist beyond Google Chrome. My first one is Mighty Text. The reason I like this Chrome extension is because I don't like to always carry two or three devices. I like to be able to work from one but accomplish all of the functionality of it. So this Mighty Text Google Chrome extension gives me the ability to take messages that are coming into my phone and just see it across any device, even a Chromebook, where I can see and even respond back. I can also live off of less cell phones because of that, because it has the ability to text back without the phone. Basically, it runs as an app back to a Droid phone, and when I send a text from the internet, it sends it through the phone as if it was from the phone directly.
Right.
Nice. Yep.
We reviewed that quite a while ago, mm-hmm. and there's similar tools. Push Bullets, another one that mm-hmm. falls in that category. File transfers, those kinds of things can happen to it as well. But you got to kind of live in the Google universe for that to work with the Android phone and the mm-hmm. Chrome browsers. So.
But I even like the ability to kind of override my phone to be able to see even beyond texts. Yep. You know, dial out, see images and other things, even though there are other tools that can kind of do mm-hmm. the same thing.
Yeah.
Nice. And you must have been thinking about this for a long time. Not one, but two picks of the week. Got to get them in.
And we don't just let anybody do that.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me an all-star. We'll let people like Pastor Gunther be a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
But my other... It takes a lot more than that. Sorry.
I'll limit it to two. My second Google Chrome extension to ponder is Grammarly. I found that I was doing a lot of typing in various places that I love to have a grammar or spell check, but it doesn't exist. A place like Facebook, Twitter, within my Gmail messages, where I can use other tools like a spell check, maybe if I'm in Gmail, but Grammarly has the ability to override anything that I'm doing within the Chrome browser and to just check for errors. So I can just kind of see it running while I'm typing, regardless of where it is that if I'm inputting something, it will automatically check, like I said, for grammar, spelling, other places like that, because I found that if I'm trying to move quickly, I don't always put my best face forward that, you know, I don't think about it before I send it in some cases.
You got the red squigglies or blue squigglies, you know, you got
to do something. You're probably like me, you think about it the moment you send it. Like, oh, now I know what I should have done.
And I know there's tools like undoing a Gmail message or undoing a send, but so many other places where I type things that it's not intuitive for that site to have, you know, a grammar spell check built into it. And that I found has been a very useful tool.
Now, that's one disadvantage maybe of using Google products, because if you're in the office space, Word has that kind of built in, right? You know, you have grammar checking, so that darn apostrophe S shouldn't be there on it. You know, it's not possessive, whatever. With Google, this allows, you know, anything that you're using in a browser, all the Web 2.0 tools to give you that functionality.
And it does have functionality also where you could drop something like a Microsoft Word product into it, where you could check it, or you can even do like a plagiarism check or something like that, but I haven't used the tool for that. Mm-hmm. It's mainly if I'm living in LinkedIn or a blog or something like that is automatically checking for me.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea for a show that plagiarism stuff is big mm-hmm. now, and it's the intelligence behind it, smart. I know a lot of teachers that are using that kind of stuff now, rather than just kind of doing a Google search. Mm-hmm. I know I've heard this somewhere before. They're actually using some tools. So,
awesome.
Thanks. Good picks, James. Thanks. Sally, are up next.
And I came across a webinar. I actually was reading the TechSmith e-newsletter, since I'm such a TechSmith fangirl. And they were promoting this webinar that's coming up next Wednesday. It is done by eSchool Media, and the title of it is Teaching Faculty to Flip. Imagine that. We were just talking about that. And they've got a guy from the University of Northern Colorado who's done this in his university setting, went through a pilot program for like 2 years, I think. We'll be sharing his experience, but also being joined by someone from TechSmith to kind of talk about best value of video in the classroom, that kind of thing. TechSmith's put a lot into video in the classroom, obviously a sweet spot for them. So free webinar, again, Wednesday, February 3rd. It's at 2 p.m. Eastern or 11 a.m. Pacific. So looks like it'll last about an hour, and we'll have a link in the show notes to the registration form for that.
Great. Mm-hmm. I'm last, and my pick is only for iPhone users. So James had his Android pick. I have my iPhone or iOS pick called Overcast. And listeners, frequent listeners to the show will probably remember me talking about another tool called Pocket Cast, which is cross-platform. But since I've been on the iPhone, I've tried this newer product out, and I like it a lot. One of the reasons I like it is it has a feature called Smart Speed. And what that allows you to do is chop out, or the player chops out silence. So this is especially good for spoken podcasts, where, you know, a little bit at a time, if the application senses quiet, it'll just skip it and go and keep on going, which helps you accelerate, you know, the speed at which you can listen to a podcast. Most podcast players will also speed things up, so you can get it at 1.5x or 2x or 3x if you can take that. But this is a little bit smarter because you can't even really tell it's happening. So you could take a one-hour podcast, and if there's a pause like that, it would eliminate that. And then it gives you a little readout as it's going how much it's sped up the whole podcast as a result. That's, and I'm thinking other podcast players are going to get this kind of feature because it's really useful. And that's why I kind of went this way. It's a free tool, free app. There is a suggested donation and those kinds of things, but you don't have to pay. There's a web player as well, so you can get it online. And audio only, that's the other caveat. It will not play video, which makes sense if one of its major features is this smart speed. So if you're interested in that, it's free to try. You can import your OPML files, so you get all your feeds in there, all your podcasts will load up. It's got all similar features to Pocket Cast, where you can, say, just keep the last episode and throw away the rest, or automatically sync, that kind of stuff. So that's my pick, Overcast. Have to be on iOS, so iPad, iPhone, that platform to make it work. So,
got a little marketing genius behind that to tell you how much time they've saved you. It's like the grocery store checkout where they say, "And we saved you this much money."
So, yeah,
very positive.
And some of the podcasts I listen to are very verbose, so it's good to chop out as much as you can, because I want to obviously learn as much as I can. So.
Awesome,
Sally. We're going to jump right to our featured video, am I right?
We are, and this being Evangelism Day here at
Martin Luther College,
yeah, they had a very special worship service to start the day with evangelism focus. They had Pastor Mark Jeske here leading the worship, and I thought that would be a great video to feature so everyone can enjoy Evangelism Day. I heard great things about the worship. Wasn't able to be there myself, so I'm going to be watching the video too.
Yep. So the link will be in the show notes. And speaking of show notes, James, you brought it up. You gave a nice plug for them. It's really a rich resource, I think, for technology and ministry stuff. And all praise goes to Sally, who keeps this thing going. But if you want to do a little research on some kind of a technology and ministry topic, chances are we've talked about it at some point, and the search feature works great. And you can kind of dig down. Maybe we did an interview about it. It was a pick, some other review, that kind of thing. WellsTech.wells.net is the place to go. That's also where you can connect with us, which we really like. Give us your thoughts, give us your favorites.
questions that you might have. We're on all the social networks, so it's very difficult to get away from us. You can just do a search, and we're in all your podcast players as well, even in Overcast.
Important that they do that, because next week we're dedicating a whole show to their feedback. Yep. So we definitely want to hear from folks, because we're doing a community feedback show next week.
Yep, we just kind of tuck all those pieces of feedback away over the weeks, and then we roll them up, and that's the show, which is kind of fun. So the show really doesn't have a theme. We just kind of bounce around to whatever you guys wanted to talk about.
Been a lot of fun to do those, yeah.
James and Jim, thank you so much for joining us, for your continued support, right? And it's important that we have these conversations, I think, for people to get a sense for this is what your Synod's doing, you know, in this area, that we're right there and we're thinking about this and dedicating resources to it. Thanks for all you do.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.